pick just one, but perhaps I think one of the most important ones is a lack of discipline. But as an investor, you know, we're not actually running the business. We shouldn't be micromanaging.
What do you think, being a venture investor, the things that you look at fundamentally that you think, do you know what, if private equity firms looked at this a little bit more, they might learn a little bit more about their businesses? Welcome back to the Raw Selection Private Equity Podcast. Joining us today is Maria Pacella, Managing Partner at Pender Ventures. Today, we're talking all about the mistakes made by private equity and venture capital firms, what a good investor looks like, and the learnings from the past 20 years of investing from Maria. Before we jump in, if you've not already, please do check me out on LinkedIn. We're an executive search firm specializing in the private equity space. I'm about to run out of connections as the maximum is 30,000 and I'm just short of that. But if you haven't done so, please check me out. Either follow me or drop me a connection message. If this doesn't end up running me through to the 30, happily connect. Always keen to expand the network. But let's jump in to the conversation with Maria. So Maria, sure. If you could give us a 60 to 90 second breakdown of you, please.
Absolutely. I grew up in a remote community on Vancouver Island, the daughter of Italian immigrants. So very much grew up with the kind of independent, self-reliant, you figure it out, but you can do anything you set your mind to, hard work and integrity school of thought. Then I went to the big city of Vancouver for business school. After which I went to our financial mecca here in Canada, of Toronto, joined investment banking with Deutsche Bank on the M&A side, but very quickly became enamored with the technology businesses and really developing a deep understanding of their products and strategies. I had already been personally just quite an active public market investor by then as well, and decided this still relatively niche thing, particularly in Canada, called venture capital, was the perfect combination of venture and technology. I thought getting some operational experience would be useful to be a better investor. So I joined a startup and then joined my first VC firm in 2001, which was timely indeed, at least from a learning perspective. And then since then, I did another startup along the way and then joined Pender Fund Capital in 2017. Essentially founding Pender Ventures at that time, which is really the private tech investing umbrella within Pender Fund. So really, for the last 23 years, I've lived through kind of three big and impactful cycles in our industry.
Yeah, absolutely. And we may or may not be going through one now, who knows, with regards to the times. We'll be told once we've gone through it that it was horrible. So what mistakes do you see private equity firms or venture capitals making on a regular basis?
Well, you know, it's hard to pick just one, but perhaps I think one of the most important ones is lack of discipline. And that's really at a firm or individual level in many ways. As a venture capital investor, you really, of course, have to have strong conviction to make an investment. But you also need to have the discipline to make the tough decisions to maybe not invest, to not continue investing, to, you know, decide when to exit. This lack of discipline can really manifest in so many ways that can impact fund and portfolio returns, such as getting caught up in trending areas in tech and FOMO. I think we saw some of that in the last few years. And these trends might be very fleeting, maybe outside your investment mandate or scope, an area you don't have experience in. And it might result in, you know, investing in more dollars or paying up, impacting ownership levels. That throws off your portfolio construction. And then you might not have invested in enough companies to maintain good diversification, which of course is important for the power law of venture capital returns. The list really goes on. Or you simply fall in love with a company, product, or founder and develop blind spots. Really that discipline, I would say in venture capital, and maybe in many investment areas really, is essential for effective risk management, you know, strategic long-term thinking.
Excellent. So when we think about the discipline side, I suppose it's trying to force an investment to look at it and be like, oh, you know what, we need to make a platform acquisition, we need a deal coming in here. What are you doing to ensure that you retain that? And how do you put maybe parameters in? Someone's sitting here going, well, we've got dry powder, we need to deploy capital, there's an investment here, it's not perfect, but we're going to do it anyway. How do you avoid those types of scenarios and retain that discipline?
Right. So it's really about, starting out with a good investment thesis and framework. This is easier said than done. It's not necessarily just folks sitting in a room together and coming up with a nice one pager framework. It's kind of honed in over years of experience and years of experience in investing and analyzing deeply the areas in which you invest in. And then using this sort of lens, if you will, to create that discipline. So when things do look a bit off, there's usually some, a string to be pulled there. And then really having on the back of that a team that is really good at challenging each other, that really asks the tough questions, forces to the lead to go out and look for good answers, really, kind of a system of checks and balances. And so that decision making really needs to be a good process within a firm and an open process. We went out of our way to hire and recruit talent from different disciplines, product management, sector experience, bringing different kind of mindset to the investment thinking. It does maybe slow us down a little bit, but we ultimately think that'll lead to better investment decision making and those checks and balances.
Sense. And so same question on the portfolio side. You mentioned discipline for the PE and VC firms. What mistakes do you see? I'm sure there's a few here, being an investor. What are the main mistakes that you will see on the portfolio side?
Yes, certainly quite a few. But I would say one, perhaps that our industry, the investors themselves, have helped magnify, and that's kind of poor capital allocation. As we know, in 2020, 2021, there was record fundraising, record deployment into startups. I think I heard that term out there of fogwashing companies with capital. Sometimes it makes sense for sure. There are truly hard tech revolutionary technologies that you need to invest hundreds of millions before you'll see the returns. But a vast majority of the companies are evolutionary technology and really need the founder, the management team really needs to think carefully on how much money to raise for their business, what makes sense. Obviously, the earlier stage, the harder that is. But really, coming through that period where valuations were so hard, founders were told to take as much money as they can because they wouldn't have to give up as much ownership. There are consequences to that. They set, very we set very high expectations on how big those businesses need to be in order to drive the returns that we need to achieve for our investors. So now we're seeing the consequences of that, of course, with a drop in the value of unicorns, less funding, less exits, an increase in restructurings and layoffs that have happened since the end of 2021, beginning of 2022.
Sorry to interrupt. Just a quick mention of our long-standing partnership with Grata. As you will probably know, the private equity scene is constantly evolving, and deal flow is moving now to proprietary and data-driven processes. Grata provides you with the data and information of over 7 million private companies. So if you're looking to improve your proprietary deal flow and improve the data access, then reach out to Grata today. Now back to the podcast. So if you think about the protection of that with the portfolio and thinking, making good investments, looking at good deals, obviously numbers is going to drive that, of course. The more you see, the more opportunity you have. In the venture world, it's very different because in private equity, obviously there's a lot more financial data, there's a lot more modeling, there's a lot more to go off. But in an adventure world, there's a lot less, and the concept has to be right and everything else. What do you think, being a venture investor, the things that you look at fundamentally that you think, do you know what, if private equity firms looked at this a little bit more, they might learn a little bit more about their businesses? Because there's got to be a bit of a cross transfer over there with not just looking at financial, because there may not be any, and not just looking at the last 10 years of accounts because they've only been around for 6 months. That kind of, what are some of the things that you're really drilling down on when making decisions on investments in the portfolio?
Yeah, absolutely. So for sure, private equity has financial acumen. And there are numbers to look at, particularly historically, as you say. Also, you know, I think probably an area we would be similar in is really understanding unit economics. And ultimately, at some point, the product, the business has to have good unit economics, whether that's at the product level, at the solution level, if it's a tech product that has licensing and services, for example. Like, you need to really understand how much money is there to be made at a unit level. It's probably an area that we both should be really good at. I think where we see multiple expansion and strategic multiples being paid is probably an area that venture is and should be a bit better at. This is why we need to strive for those, you know, 10x, 100x type companies. And where you can get those returns are more on that kind of revolutionary lofting a company into a new industry, a new vertical, really changing, you know, using, creating a new solution, creating a new market in which there would be no data for. So going out and really talking to greenfield customers and, you know, taking some risk there, of course, but understanding how a technology or product can revolutionize a new industry that might not even exist today, and spending a lot of time on that future looking scenario is certainly something that could then drive a lot of value in an M&A, for example, and that strategic multiple that perhaps, you know, PE wouldn't be wanting to rely on, because it is certainly based on a lot of assumptions.
And coming back to the mistakes of the portfolio companies, what, looking on the other side of things, on the actual portfolios that you've had that have hit it out of the park, what do you see as the kind of key elements of that, outside of just having a phenomenal product, or maybe it would be, or a service or whatever else? And I mean that at the core level. It might be that they, you know, the delivery side would be different, but the what have you seen that's gone, these are the key things that you look for, that I want, that's what drives it? And you may not know that going in, but those are what's been consistent with the deals that you've had that have done well.
Yeah, so I would say probably a few key things stand out. One is the leader, the founder, has some unfair knowledge or expertise in that respective market or technology. So they might have been the customer at some point and really, really fundamentally understand what that product or solution is solving in such a deep way, and such a deep appreciation, that it's pretty uncomparable to competitors and things like that. And they're very, very committed to solving that problem. In fact, they are so committed that if it's not impact technology that will solve that problem, they'll still go out and create a company to figure out how to solve this problem. They're that passionate and committed to that. Two, I would say their ability to really think through that capital allocation I was talking about. So, you know, thinking through, when is the right time? When do I feel like that business's product is proven enough that, you know, perhaps not bootstrapping the business makes sense anymore because I'm missing out on opportunity, competitors are coming up behind me. I need to take that capital because that will give me so much leverage. I know where to apply that capital in sales and marketing to really exponentially grow my business now and not take too much capital, you know, at the wrong time. So really understanding the mechanics, I would say, of their business.
Makes sense. And you mentioned 23 years. I was going to say 20 plus, but you gave it away. 23 years of investing, no doubt a lot of things learned. If there's someone here listening that hasn't got 20 plus years or wants to learn from someone who has, regardless of their level of experience, what are the top three, top, however you want to position it, kind of what you've learned, what you wish you'd known when you first kicked off as in investing?
Yeah, well, I would say, you know, the first thing would be, you know, I was certainly a bit surprised a little bit, you know, our industry kind of teaches us to look for patterns. What makes a great entrepreneur? What makes a great product? What is the playbook for this, right? What is the formula for success? And certainly there's some truisms like that unit economics I just talked about. You ultimately eventually need to at least have a theory of how that's going to turn out to be successful in long term. But ironically, we actually need to look for the outliers to hit those home runs. So those entrepreneurs that don't actually follow the the patterns. So there's this sort of, you know, oxymoron, I guess. So I think the biggest lesson would be really to appreciate that you have to have humility, right? Because we're wrong an awful lot of the time, as the power law shows. So we really have to be humble, open-minded. So while we have, you know, we need to develop that strong conviction, we need to be open-minded enough to really uncover and be open to finding those, unusual companies that don't fit the pattern, that will really be that next winner. And going against the grain, particularly in our industry, that does sort of be, there's a big part of our industry that's that herd mentality, of course. But more and more, as is becoming more competitive, we have to more and more go, in fact, against the grain to win.
Does that drive, and you mentioned obviously the mistakes there, but does that drive an increased number of mistakes because, albeit you'd like to look for a pattern, you're kind of looking for somebody going the opposite way, and sometimes the opposite way is the wrong way, I'm sure, and then sometimes it's the right. You know, we know of all the Ubers of the world and the Facebooks and the Dropboxes, which, you know, all got phenomenal venture capital backing and did incredibly well and redefined, you know, communication as we see it from a Facebook perspective, redefined the fact that we don't need big, you know, computers to hold everything on, and et cetera. Does that bring an increased element of risk because there's an area of looking for is just the wrong thing sometimes?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I certainly hope not. But I do think it'll just be different risks, perhaps. And as I mentioned, I think too much capital had a lot of risk, both at the fund and the investor side, and then actually the entrepreneur side as well. It's almost like some unlearning has to happen, and there'll just be new risks, new mistakes, I think. I think longer term, certainly there are just some fundamentals, just like any area of investing, that still have, you know, that are still true. Investing fundamentally good people, good products in good markets still has to be the long-term goal. I think how we get there and how we assess the risks and the opportunities and the mistakes that are made along the way will just be different.
Not only am I the host of the Private Equity Podcast, I'm also the founder and managing partner of Raw Selection. Raw Selection's an executive search firm working exclusively within the private equity industry, supporting the portfolio companies and the private equity firms with securing exceptional talent, with our motto of de-risking executive search. So, as you mentioned, long-time investing, what are the attributes that you foresee that make a good investor?
I think the discipline that I talked about before, There's no one predictor of what I think makes a great VC. We come from all walks of life. Psychology might be, and understanding people might be, I think, one of the highest predictors of success, perhaps. But, you know, we could be former founders, entrepreneurs ourselves, bankers, consultants. But they really have to have, I think, that discipline of mindset and create that framework over years of experience, you know, not the next day. And this is also why sometimes a lot of entrepreneurs themselves don't necessarily make great investors, because a lot of what they have to do is very undisciplined at the beginning, and really, really focused and getting your hands dirty and all of that. But as an investor, you know, we're not actually running the business. We shouldn't be micromanaging. We should not think that we're smarter than the entrepreneur, and all of those things. So it's really, really important to have kind of that level of separation, and just be as supportive as possible. Ultimately, that ability to pick the winners is key. So that really it kind of entails always being aware of the general tech trends and shifts to really make sure you're going after the right opportunity set. But while at the same time, being that good judge of character and abilities to really make sure that you can help add value to those opportunities over time. And I think that humility as well that I mentioned, because that means that you have the ability to learn and grow and be open, and to develop good relationships with entrepreneurs and the teams themselves. There is, you know, a lot of capital still out there, and great entrepreneurs have their choice. And we want, I think everyone, the best relationships are where there's great alignment.
And how do you keep the balance of being involved and supporting the portfolio, as you know, you mentioned you've been in an operator role previously, and being an investor? You know, there's supporting and wanting them to win, and obviously everybody benefits if they do. How do you balance that between being involved and potentially annoying the investor, but then also being there from a supportive perspective? Annoying the operator and the operator. Being the investor.
Yeah, it's always a balance for sure. I think it comes down to the specific individual quite often. You know, they're often, again, not wanting to impose a formula or playbook. I don't think that's necessarily the right thing to do all the time. Certainly, there are entrepreneurs that want much more of that formulaic kind of guidance sometimes. And we actually have on our investment team, we have a head of people strategy. And she, in her own right, has worked and built teams to over 1,000 people. At our stage of investing, there's maybe kind of 20 to 40 people might not have that functionality HR built out, let alone a head of HR. If it's a first-time founder CEO, they want that guidance to help scale the organization. It's much more about the organizational structure, you know, what we've seen work, what we has seen has not, but allowing them to obviously make their own decisions and mistakes. I think the best way quite often is to put up examples of, you know, a great VP marketing that we've worked with looks like this or like that. But what is right for your organization based on your culture, your stage, your type of product, you know, ultimately just guiding, providing some guidance, but ultimately we want entrepreneurs that will take in information, but have enough of their own conviction to make their decision on their own.
Makes sense. What are your influences, Maria? What do you watch? What do you read? What do you listen to? You would recommend that others check out, please?
Yeah. Well, I definitely very much come from the, you know, Buffett Munger school of investing for sure. So really that fundamentals of investing, given how early I've started in venture, the folks that really kind of blogged at the time that when blogging was just started, and are still fantastic investors to this day are Fred Wilson from Union Square and Brad Feld from the Founder Group, I think are fantastic. I listen to a ton of podcasts, including, of course, yours, but there is the Acquired podcast by Ben Gilbert and David Rosenthal. And they really go deep into businesses. I think their podcasts are 2-3 hours as well. And it's not just tech businesses, others like Costco and Visa, I think was one of their latest. So they spend months researching, reading, talking to experts, and then present the entire story from start to finish or to current of these businesses, dissecting them in ways that are very understandable, but bring out the key elements. So if you love businesses, this is a great podcast, I think.
Some good recommendations. If anybody wishes to reach out to Maria, how best do they do so, please?
Well, certainly I'm available on LinkedIn or X, and then my email, mpichella@penderfund.com.
Perfect. We'll put that all in the show notes. Well, thank you very much for joining us. Maria gives an insight into private equity, venture capital mistakes, portfolio mistakes, and also sharing the obviously extensive experience you have within investing. So thank you very much for sharing everything you have.
Thank you very much, Alex.
And as always, thank you very much for everybody who's tuned in today and listened. If you ever need support with your private equity or portfolio executive hiring, please do reach out to us at Raw Selection. If you've not already, please do subscribe to the podcast, which is now out every single week. So till the next time, keep smashing it. And thank you very much for listening.